This episode is brought to you by Infosys Public Services, a leader in next-generation digital solutions and consulting for the DMV. Learn more at infosyspublicservices.com/DMV. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the AnvaCast. This week, we're going to be speaking with and getting to know one of our key strategic partners, the folks at the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, more commonly referred to as ASHTO. And I'm excited to welcome to our episode the Executive Director of ASHTO, Jim Timon. Jim, welcome to your first appearance on the AnvaCast.
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate you having me here.
Jim, we often refer to ASHTO as our sibling on the DOT side of the house, in reference to AMVA being the trade association for the motor vehicle agencies and the state highway patrol agencies. And I believe ASHTO refers to themselves similarly on the Department of Transportation side of the house. But maybe you can expand on that a little bit and tell our listeners who may not be as familiar with ASHTO exactly what ASHTO does as an organization.
Well, sure. We're very similar to AMVA. We represent all 52 state departments of transportation across the country. 52 because it's all 50 states, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. That's our membership. And, you know, again, similar to AMVA, we're essentially a trade association that represents the state departments of transportation here in Washington. And also we provide that opportunity for state DOTs to be able to come together and share best practices and to develop products and services where there's some commonality across state lines, where it makes more sense for us to pool resources and to be able to produce products or services as a bundle, as opposed to each individual state having to go out there and do that on their own.
Yeah, so it's quite similar to what we do at AMVA, and I know that we have had to transition how we do that, particularly the past 10 months. You can't hold in-person committee meetings, annual meetings, all those types of opportunities for people across those jurisdiction lines to build those relationships together in person. How's ASHTO handled that pivot and that change to this environment that we've been in now for about 10 months?
Well, Ian, I mean, that was probably the number one issue or that we were concerned with back in March and April, and really wanted to make sure that we're able to continue to be able to do the business of the organization as people transition to remote work and as we were unable to bring people together in person to do those types of meetings that you're speaking about. You know, the association, I think, and the state DOT community in general pivoted very quickly and extremely well to deal with the challenges that the pandemic brought. And, you know, we were able to hold virtual meetings of almost all of our committees. We do about 25 to 30 committee meetings over the spring, summer, and early fall. We held almost all of those virtually, including really at the end of March, we had a couple of meetings that were scheduled. And rather than cancel them, we were able to pivot to doing some of them virtually right away. So within just like a week of those stay-at-home orders and travel restrictions kicking in, you know, we were able to pivot to virtual meetings almost immediately. Mm. And look, I don't think anybody's going to be able to tell you that doing virtual meetings is the same as doing them in person, but it certainly has enabled us to continue to work on the important work of the association. It's allowed us to continue to keep those networking connections with peers within different state DOTs across the country. It's enabled us to do a lot of our technical work on standards and best practices that we do. But again, you know, we're really hoping that we can return to those in-person meetings sooner rather than later, because, you know, there's just nothing can replace those hallway conversations that folks have and those face-to-face conversations. You know, you're being able to look at somebody face-to-face across a table or in the same room is a lot different than trying to do all this work virtually. We've adapted, I think, really well and are doing the best we can with it, but you know, we're hopeful to be able to return to in-person meetings and interacting in person as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think we would have the same story and certainly receiving that same feedback, which is it's great that we have these options to continue the work, but it's certainly not a one-for-one replacement.
Well, and I don't know if you're experiencing this, Ian, too, but one of the advantages that we saw over the summer was, you know, because people didn't have to travel to attend some of these meetings, we actually saw higher attendance for some of our virtual meetings than we would normally see for in-person meetings. You know, if you don't have to worry about getting permission and budgeting for some of the travel associated from attending these meetings, it made it easier for some folks to be able to attend virtually.
Yes, we've seen some of that trade-off as well, as whether it's the numbers are up or folks who normally wouldn't have the opportunity to engage can now do that from wherever they're sitting with their device. How much have you seen the content of those topics shift in the past 10 months? So how has the situation of the pandemic changed, if at all, not only the key priorities for the Astro community, but maybe how they're approaching some of those policies, the items that the committees are working on in terms of best practices, or of course, ASHTO technical standards, which I know is a real important cornerstone of the community. Has the environment we're in actually shifted that content approach in any meaningful way?
Well, I think it depends on the committee and the type of work that we do. You know, you mentioned the technical work and the standards development work that we do. I don't think we've seen a big shift in the content there. You know, I think more in that area, it's been a shift in the process for how we get together, work through those technical issues and develop those standards. You know, so much of that work is done in person. You know, the ability to kind of get to people together from different state DOTs and kind of work through some of those details in person and having to do that remotely has been a change. A lot of that work has already in the past happened, you know, through email and exchange of ideas that way. But usually when you're finalizing a lot of that work, you're doing it in those in-person committee meetings and not being able to do that and having to do that virtually has been a change. But from a content standpoint, I would say, you know, certainly we especially in the very beginning of the pandemic, have had to really focus on the impact that COVID-19 has had on state DOTs. And it's been a wide-ranging impacts, whether it's the financial impacts of the decrease in driving that we saw during the height of those stay-at-home orders and the revenue impact that had had for state DOTs, if it was just you know, the best practices that state DOTs were developing and how to keep their workers and the contractors that were working on these construction projects, where in a lot of states, they continued to move forward, even in March and April and May, when other businesses went remote. You can't do highway construction or highway maintenance work remotely. You know, we certainly brought the state DOT community together to identify best practices for how states were doing that in the safest and most efficient way. We brought state DOTs together to be able to talk about the impacts from a revenue standpoint so that we could convey those impacts here to our colleagues on Capitol Hill and within the administration. You know, so I think that from a content standpoint on the technical side, it stayed pretty consistent. But I would say on the policy side and the best practices side, there certainly was a shift in content to focus on the COVID-19 impacts.
So let's talk a little bit more about that revenue impact, because certainly I think, as you referenced, anybody could have seen early on for sure travel was dramatically down. It seems to have come back somewhat, but we know far more folks are working virtually than ever before. Could you quantify or at least qualify by some level of size, you know, what's the level of impact that DOTs are really having and preparing to continue to take as traffic shifts so dramatically?
Well, you know, we saw, you know, reductions of, you know, 40-50% in traffic volumes in a lot of places at the stay at home, at the height of those stay at home orders in at the end of March, beginning of April, and into May. You know, the good news is that we saw those numbers rebound pretty quickly, quicker than we thought, to be honest with you. And by the time you got into June and July, you know, you were at, you know, we had up to almost 90% of what had been the year before from a VMT standpoint. Those reductions in traffic and travel had a direct correlation to a reduction in revenues that state DOTs collect. So many state DOTs, all of them really, still rely on some sort of a state tax on fuel to fund their transportation programs, that when you saw that reduction in VMT and traffic, you saw a reduction in revenue that state DOTs count on to run their programs. You know, so really what we think is state DOTs lost about $16 billion between the beginning of the pandemic and the end of the federal fiscal year, so September 30th. And we think the long-term impacts for state DOTs is going to be about $35, $36 billion over, you know, 3 to 5 years. And, you know, all of that is just an estimate at this point as we look forward, because, you know, who knows what's going to be happening in the future. I mean, we're seeing this big spike in cases right now across the country that hasn't translated into mass stay-at-home orders the same way that it did in the spring. But if we do get to that point, we expect that we would see similar reductions in VMT and travel. And that estimate of, you know, $35, $36 billion in lost revenue for state DOTs would probably increase if we're faced with that, with a similar round of stay-at-home orders.
And are you seeing any commonalities across states in terms of how they're planning to cover that gap? Or is it really different based on the different states and their different project priorities?
You know, it it is varying from state to state. I mean, the one consistent thing that we've seen is that every state has lost revenue. Even when you saw those VMT numbers pick back up in June and July, you're not able to make up those 2 to 3 months where you were down, you know, 30-40%. Some revenue sources you did see recover. Some states rely on registration fees or taxes on the purchases of new vehicles to help fund their programs. And what we saw for those revenue sources is that as the pandemic started to, the stay-at-home orders were pulled back on and people got back out there and were buying vehicles, you were able to see that that revenue source kind of make up the difference. But you're never going to make up the difference there on the gas tax revenue side, because, right, you know, people didn't just go out there and said, oh, well, we drove 40% less in April, so we're going to drive 40% or 140% more in July and August. That just didn't happen. So that revenue was lost and it's never going to be recovered.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good contrast with in the AMVA community, and you kind of referenced it with some of the registration fees. They characterize a lot of it as deferred revenue, because even though the agencies might've shut down or changed the priority of processing transactions, such as with extending a license, eventually that license is going to have to be renewed and the individual is going to pay their fee. So it's more of that deferred revenue, as opposed to if people just didn't drive in April and May, that gas tax is gone forever.
Exactly. And that's where that $16 billion number comes from between, say, March and the end of September. And that $35, $36 billion number comes from for that 3 to 5 year period. Because again, those are revenues that we just don't see coming back. It's not deferred revenues, similar to registration fees. And we're seeing different states deal with that in different ways. Some states are going out there and trying to bond for that lost revenue, essentially saying, you know, if they haven't already gone out there and had a robust bonding program, some states now are turning to the bond market to try to bring in some additional revenue that way in order to be able to close the gaps. But a lot of states are having to just cut back on projects or other activities that they normally would. And unfortunately, that means that some of the construction projects that state DOTs were planning to move forward with this past summer and this coming year are just not going to move forward without some type of federal assistance to make up that difference. States are really having to prioritize your maintenance and operations activities because those are the things that absolutely need to get done. We want to make sure that those activities are the first order of business. So if there's a decrease in revenue, we're seeing more likely a cutback on the construction side as opposed to, say, on the maintenance and operations side.
Yeah. So you mentioned the federal assistance. Is ASTRO asking for some more direct support in terms of the COVID relief bills, or is it a part of a longer-term strategy as it relates to perhaps, say, the new administration that will be coming in a couple of months?
Well, we've been really since March and April, really trying to work with Congress to get direct relief to state DOTs for this lost revenue so that states wouldn't have to pull back on the projects that they had planned to do this summer or this coming year. And, so we've been working with Congress to try to make that case. Unfortunately, we weren't in the first couple of rounds of COVID relief bills that were signed by the president, but we continue to push forward. We've got some good champions there in Congress for what we're looking for. And again, hopefully if Congress moves some type of a COVID relief bill here in the lame duck session, that will be a part of that. And if not, you know, we'll continue to work with the new Congress when they get sworn in here at the beginning of January, and with the new administration when they come in on January 20th.
And is there anything specifically on the new administration side, particularly when you work with the Department of Transportation, and I know more specifically the Federal Highway Administration, anything that's particularly on ASTRO's list to talk with the new administration about, or is it more the continuing things that are always on the list?
Well, I mean, we've had some really good conversations with the Biden-Harris transition team already. We are, really, I think the first order of business for us, and I think for them, is dealing with COVID relief and finding some way to stimulate the nation's economy as well. And we really do think that investing in infrastructure and providing direct federal assistance to state DOTs and to transit agencies to make sure that they can continue to move forward with the projects and activities that they've been planning for, then, you know, I think that's a great way for the Biden-Harris administration to get started is to, you know, try to address some of these COVID-19 pandemic issues and stimulate the economy by investing in infrastructure and in transportation more specifically. So we've had some really good conversations with them around that. We've had some good conversations with folks on Capitol Hill about that as well. So we're excited for, you know, what the new administration and the point of view that they'll be bringing to the table and eager to work with them to try to address some of these challenges. Mm.
That's really neat. And I guess when you talk about the lost revenue and the long-term changes, has ASTRO had any conversations in terms of there's a lot of speculation that some of the behaviors that we've become accustomed to in the pandemic may remain even post-pandemic, particularly as it relates to work styles and commuting. And I'm curious if, you know, you saw the dramatic decrease, and some of that will come back post-pandemic, but some of our travel behaviors may be changed forever. And any predictions or possible theories on what that's going to mean, not only for the gas tax directly, but just the transportation system in general, in terms of long-term changes in the way people move about and the way we move goods and services?
That's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, I think that we really, I think as transportation professionals need to be, you know, watching what the trends will look like here over the next few years. I do think that there is going to be a permanent change in the way that people commute, and whether or not people return to that standard 5 day a week working from your office kind of business model, I don't know. I mean, I think that one of the things that's been proven over the last, you know, 9 or 10 months is that we can be very efficient and effective working remotely. I do think there's still a lot of value in an office work environment where you're able to see your colleagues in person. But at the same time, I think that there is a lot of value and a lot of benefits for being able to do work remotely. That obviously will impact transportation. And, you know, one of the things that I think we're all going to be looking at closely is how quickly we see transit ridership return. You know, I think there are some concerns, obviously, from a public health standpoint and a virus standpoint as to whether or not it's safe to ride transit. I think there's some studies out there that say, yes, if you take the proper precautions, it is safe to ride public transportation. Our major urban areas cannot survive without a robust public transportation system. You can't just take all of those folks that used to ride transit and then just put them out on our roads. The systems just can't handle it. So we're going to need a multimodal approach moving forward. But it'll be interesting to see how those commuting patterns change. While we've seen VMT come back up to, say, about 90% of what it used to be, those miles that are being traveled are being done differently. I mean, we're not seeing as heavy a traditional morning and evening rush hour. We're seeing this spike in travel kind of in the middle of the day around the lunch hour, which has been interesting to see. So people are still driving. They're just not taking the same types of trips that they had before the pandemic. Yeah. And I think that we as transportation professionals are going to have to monitor that and probably have to make funding and project decisions a little differently moving forward.
Yeah, and it reminds me, I probably need to invite you back to a second episode sometime in the future just to talk about how we're going to change how we fund transportation if all these changes happen, because certainly relying on the way we've done it for so long may not be sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about AASHTO itself, the organization? You know, you're certainly not a small sleepy trade association in DC. You have a sizable staff. You have a physical office right in the shadow of Capitol Hill. You know, when you talk about the changes to, we may not see the traditional 5-day work week people going to an office. Has AASHTO, the actual organization and the folks you employ at AASHTO, have you started to tackle that question for you and your team?
Well, you know, we started transitioning or experimenting with work from home about 4 or 5 years ago, really going to say, giving folks the opportunity for maybe once every 2 weeks to be able to work from home. And by the time the pandemic hit, we had instituted a policy that allowed some of our staff to be able to work from home as much as 2 days a week. So when the pandemic hit and we had to transition to full-time remote work, we were able to do that pretty seamlessly for, I would say, about 75% of the staff that had that ability to work from home prior to the pandemic. But there were still about 25% of the staff that really hadn't had that opportunity in the past, because a lot of the work that they did required stuff that we have physically in the office that we weren't set up to be able to do remotely. So we pivoted pretty quickly for those first 2 weeks in March to be able to set people up to work from home and work remotely that hadn't done that in the past. And again, I think this is a great success story for us as an organization in that folks were able to do that and do it really effectively. As far as, you know, what we see moving forward in the future, we're definitely going to have to reevaluate our work from home policy as we come out of the pandemic. I think that 25% of our staff that really wasn't working from home prior to the pandemic, we've proven that the most of them can be effective and do some of their work remotely. So certainly we'll see giving people the ability to work from home that maybe hadn't had that ability before when we come out of the pandemic. As far as kind of office space and whatnot, you know, Ian, we actually moved into a new office space in January of last year. So we spent about 45 days in our new office space before we shut our office building down for the last 10 months. So we're in a situation where we have this beautiful new office space that we had just moved into And most people have spent very little time in here. So it's unfortunate because it's a great location, great office space. We had really looked forward to settling in here, and we just haven't had the opportunity to do that yet.
So. That's a shame. I guess the silver lining is it'll keep that new car smell for just a little while longer.
Exactly. You know, the carpets are still clean. You know, the walls are still white, and everything looks great. Looks like we just moved in last month, which we kind of did.
So talking about pivoting, there's one other key thing I wanted to ask you about, because it's a area where Ashto did react fairly quickly and made a pretty aggressive statement, and that is the policy that your board passed, the resolution addressing race, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Can you tell me a little bit about how that conversation came about with your board of directors and what led to them adopting this resolution?
Well, Ian, thanks for bringing that up, because I'll be honest, I think this is one of the most significant achievements for us as an organization since I've been with Ashto here the last 7-8 years. You know, it really was an organic effort. It kind of grew up from individual states wanting to make sure that we made a statement, and we came up with a plan of action for how to deal with the issues of systemic racism and equity and diversity and inclusion. And, you know, it culminated really with a vote during our board of directors meeting here in early November, where we had a unanimous vote of every state DOT that was present, voting in favor of a resolution, you know, saying that the state DOT community needs to do more in this area, that we need to be to address the issues of systemic racism, to take a look at some of the past decisions that have been made in the transportation communities that have really put some of these communities of color at a disadvantage. And and you know, again, this effort to put together this resolution and to have it pass with all affirmative votes by the state DOTs that were present, I think is a real significant accomplishment for us as an organization and for the state DOT community.
And positive reaction and feedback from the community and stakeholders once you put it out there, I would hope?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it wasn't, it didn't just come together overnight. It was something that we really had to work with each of the individual states to kind of come up with a resolution that everybody was comfortable with. And really, we did that by having meetings with all of our different regions. You know, we're organized regionally here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had meetings with our Western region, with our Southern region, our Northeast region, and our Midwest region, to really kind of talk through the concerns that they had with these issues, what language would look like in a resolution, what are the things that state DOTs and that Ashto can do to make progress in this area. And through those meetings and through some really, I think, great conversations with state DOT CEOs across the country, you know, we were able to come up with this resolution and come up with an action plan for us here at Ashto to really start addressing some of these issues in a different way than we have in the past.
That's fantastic. Well, Jim, the last thing I'd like to do with you before I let you go is we always like to give our listeners the opportunity to get to know our guests a little bit more, especially someone like yourself who maybe hasn't visited with us at an AMVA conference or an event. You mentioned that you've been with Ashto now for about 7-8 years. I believe you've been executive director now for 2 of those 7-8 years. Is that
am I correct?
Yeah. And before that, though, I think, and it goes back, you and I believe, met about 11 years ago when I was with a federal agency and you were working on the Hill. So can you tell the listeners about your background before you joined Ashto?
Sure. So, I'll first, I guess, start by saying that, you know, I'm a University of Delaware graduate, similar to our president-elect here, and came to DC here to work in the federal government really right out of grad school. And, I got in the transportation kind of by accident, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people,
so many of us have,
yeah, a lot of folks in DC kind of found their way into transportation by accident and never really left. And that was certainly my story. I started out working on transportation issues here at the Office of Management and Budget, the White House Budget Office. Spent about 3 years there before going up to Capitol Hill. And I spent about a dozen years on Capitol Hill working for the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. I worked on highway transit and highway safety issues there. And I had the fortune of working for three different chairmen of that committee and working on two or three major pieces of surface transportation reauthorization legislation, starting with the Safety Lou bill and really finishing up with MAP 21. Mm-hmm. I also had the opportunity to work on pipeline safety issues that while I was up there too, which is still surface transportation, but not one that we normally consider, I think, when we talk about highways, transit, right, rail, highway safety issues. So really, cut my teeth in transportation at OMB and really developed my expertise in this area and working on Capitol Hill. And from there, I came to AASHTO about 8 years ago and have been the executive director here the last 2 years.
Great. Well, thanks for that, Jim. And thanks for joining us today. This has been great to chat with you and great to get a deeper insight into some of the topics that the DOT side of the house, as we sometimes refer to it, is tackling. And I suspect we might invite you back a few times if you're willing, as we unpack some of those different topics and the topics we haven't even gotten to today, which cross cut so many of our shared transportation policy areas.
Well, absolutely. I mean, happy to come back and speak at any time. AMVA and AASHTO, I think, have a great relationship historically. There's a lot of overlap, I think, in mm-hmm. our membership. We've got a lot of state DOTs where your members are part of the overall Department of Transportation. Yep. And, again, we have a lot of common interests there and have a great history of working together and look forward to keeping up that tradition moving forward.
Absolutely. You and your team have been really great to work with, especially on topics of highway safety, where we work a lot together, and the emerging area of automation and connected vehicles. It's been a great collaboration and look forward to doing more of it. Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the AMVAcast. I want to thank Jim again, and I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey. Thank you all. Stay well, and we'll see you the next time on the AMVAcast.
Thank you for joining us for AMVAcast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode was brought to you by Infosys Public Services. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.